You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Wes Matlock, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks, she had a pet snake, she bought a red guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there to tell her what to do, so she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess who saved herself.
This episode is brought to you by our patrons, Ari Ashkenazi and Professor of Political Theory in Star Trek, Kathy Ferguson.
Hello, and welcome to the Mythgreen Podcast. I'm your host, Wes, and with me today is...
Oren.
And...
Chris.
And today we're talking about how to make your characters sound different in dialogue, something that is pretty challenging, I think, for most writers. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Obviously, the solution is to just have each of your characters voiced by a different person. Like, that's what we're doing right now. You can tell us apart. And I mean, if my brother was here, you wouldn't be able to tell me and him apart because we sound very similar. But, you know, you're not going to get me or Wes or Chris mixed up, right?
Right. Well, and then in the book, in the format, you can just, like, get the sound wave and put it in there for the dialogue. So that even when it's in the actual printed format, people can... Yeah, that's how that works, definitely.
Or make all of your characters use a different font
no!
when they're talking.
No.
You know,
no.
Have you seen that? I remember that came up like a year ago. Ariel, the other copy editor, and I, we encountered that in an editing class together, that somebody was working on a manuscript where they were doing that.
I know why. It's because Sandman does it. In Sandman, I don't know if every character has their own font, but some of the more prominent characters use different fonts.
Oh, that's right.
And like, I'm not prepared to say that it doesn't work in Sandman. I really liked Sandman. Maybe I would have liked it better if the characters all used the same font. But if it does work in Sandman, it's because Sandman is a comic book, right? It's a very visual medium where there's an artist, like, drawing the everything.
Yeah.
So that's different than a printed text.
Right. I'm not going to say it's impossible for it to work in comics, which are a much more visual format, right? I've seen one of the much older comics we have on the site, Magic Beans, has most of the font is the same, but then when there's like these robots come on, they have like a monospace font, which just looks more mechanical. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it was okay because it was subtle, but most people who try to do that, even if it's in a comic, they're going to go way too far with it. And because if it's not really subtle, then it's distracting. And I think when you're reading a book, for instance, you expect all the font to be pretty much the same, except for like some italics maybe to offset something. If you have a quote before a chapter, maybe that would be a different font. But
look, what readers really love is huge blocks of text in italics.
Yeah, that's just, so
just
easy
like
to read.
A whole page in italics. It's great.
Yeah, but the thing is that when a storyteller does that, it's because they want the novelty of different fonts, and if you're going for the novelty of the font, then it's going to definitely lead you in the wrong direction, because then you'll overdo it almost for sure. So I feel like it's possible, but in the majority of cases, it's a really bad idea.
No, so typeface aside, how can we get at this? Other ways you guys have seen people try to make their characters sound different in dialogue?
Well, I would recommend the post Distinguishing Characters in Dialogue that Chris Winkle wrote for website. So, we could just read that, I guess. I'm just going to read that for the rest of the podcast.
That sounds good.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if we're talking about things that are perhaps bad ideas, I think the other obvious thing that we haven't talked about yet is accents. Which is kind of the elephant in the room here, right? Go ahead.
Well, I was thinking about that. It's like, in one of my show notes, I made a point that this seemed to be something that people did a lot more a few centuries ago. I mean, mm-hmm. pick up like, I don't know, anything, Wuthering Heights, or even into some like H.P. Lovecraft. They try to render these like obscure, like, you know, super northeastern United States, like rural accents, like typographically, you know, and it's just like, who can read that? Like, it just, it's, I find myself unable to really understand them because they're trying to like write an accent, you know, by like missing letters and throwing in apostrophes and stuff like that. And like, you would have to really be familiar with that to have any idea what's being said, you know? So I definitely think that's not the way to go with trying to include accent.
Yeah, there's also been a distinct drop in accents as we started caring more about not being jerks.
Yeah.
Just because it's so easy to make your accent into a caricature. And if you're making, like, if you're portraying the accent of a New Englander, it's like, okay, that's maybe not that big a deal if you get it wrong. But if you're, you know, portraying the accent of, say, a Chinese person, or someone from any number of communities that have been mocked for their accents or characterized in that way, it's like, okay, yeah, now you suddenly have to be really careful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, actually, what I think's better in those cases is don't write in an accent, but, like, you know, if you just establish, like, who they are, write them on equal ground. Like, there's no reason for that. And honestly, what I've preferred when I've read texts where there's, you know, characters that are not speaking, like, you know, native speakers of the dominant language, is like throw in some French, throw in some German, you know, like throw in some like natural like language cues that somebody might use. Like, you know, if you learn a second language, you're probably not going to do like some verbal like responses in that language as quickly, like, you know, profanity or exclamations and things like that are really easy to understand by context clues. So like readers don't have to understand those, but they add a little bit of flavor that can separate a character out without being like so horribly stereotypical with an accent.
I mean, I would be fine with that. I think it's writing other languages and dialogue is a very complicated issue because you have to make sure that you're not just that it actually makes sense to write a word that the audience might not understand right in dialogue as opposed to just narrating them speaking in French, right? And certainly when we get into things like fantasy languages, you know, conlangs, it'd be, you know, you don't really want usually to have characters saying lots of words in other languages. But I would agree that one word in a native language that's here and there that's sprinkled lightly is not a bad way to go. I would say that the biggest no-no is that when it comes to the word that is written the same way that is pronounced differently by different people, altering that word depending on how somebody says it, pronounces it, because that is very much normalizing your way of speaking and pronouncing it and othering somebody else's way of speaking it. That's not something that you should be doing, especially with real world dialects of any kind. Whereas I think if you want somebody's dialogue to sound regional, word choice is a much better way to go. And there's probably some places there that you have to be careful as well. But if people naturally have different idioms, for instance, that they use, I feel like that's a good way to regionalize dialogue.
Yeah. Perhaps a good question you could ask yourself, writers out there, is how familiar are you with this, you know, style of like manner of speaking that you'd like to, you know, use it? Like, if you're not familiar at all with it, I would not recommend doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Right? Like, why try to force it? If you're not familiar, leave it alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I would not have thought of what Chris just talked about of taking a word that you and someone else spell the same way, but that you pronounce differently and changing the spelling when they say it. That's not something that would have occurred to me, which is why my general outlook on accents is that you shouldn't do them unless you are like either an expert in them or have the resources to hire someone who is.
Yeah.
I think there are other ways to get your character across, like Chris was just talking about with idioms,
mm-hmm.
and figures of speech.
Yeah, and certainly it's a lot easier if you're dealing with fantasy groups that have, and again, yeah, if you have fantasy groups or other world groups, you still have to make sure they don't have an obvious real world parallel or else you're not getting anything.
Yeah.
But I think even then, I would, writing in pronunciation marks is generally a bad idea, but then you can, I think, do a lot more with flexible word choice. Like, they just use words in different ways,
mm-hmm.
you know, and build that in. And I think that can work really well. You do have to make sure that you're consistent, right? That you've thoroughly kind of established how these different groups talk, you know, and make sure that that stays that way. And when it's not your natural way of speaking, that can be hard. Do some documentation. But I think there's some things that you can do when you have a fantasy race that you're establishing their speaking patterns yourself that would just be hard to do if you were trying to get across a real world dialect through word choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, alternatively, you could have them all speak completely differently, and then when someone criticizes you for it, you say, excuse me, everyone's an individual. Nobody is a block. So, like, this is definitely not a topic that I am super great at, but I do have a few cheats that might be helpful for writers who are in a similar position to me of wanting their characters to sound distinct but not really knowing how to do it. One thing that I do, and this works for short stories better than it works for novels, is to just give the characters different emotional states. Because if you have two characters, if they're both, like, you know, if two characters are both angry, for example, and you're not great at making them sound different, they might sound exactly the same, but if you make one of them angry and one of them amused, now they're going to sound different. And as long as it's a short story and you don't, and you can keep them from having to cycle through the same mood in the story, then your audience will never catch on that they actually sound the same. They will sound like different people. And you see, you're very tricky, very sneaky,
you know,
is how you do this.
Even when it's not a short story, like, when I create a character, I think one of the most important things is a sort of temperament profile for that character. Which is not to say that character doesn't have a range of emotions, but there are some emotions and attitudes that are more common in the character than others. And, like, this character is just tends to be kind of, like, joking and irreverent and sarcastic a lot. And, you know, where those other characters might be a lot more, like, enthusiastic and upbeat. And having that sort of emotional temperament profile for a character, even in a novel, you know, can really help with figuring out what word choice they would use in their dialogue and also how they respond to things that happen and all sorts of, you know, I just think it's a very good idea for character development. For me, like, when I'm doing character development, that's one of the first things I would start with.
Yeah. And that seems like something that just has to be there from the beginning. Like, if you're, I don't know, like, the stronger instances of dialogue that I've edited, it's clear that the characters were thought out ahead of time, down to what you're talking about, Chris, is just, like, their mannerisms. You know, is this character somebody who's most likely to interrupt or wait? Is this character most likely someone to repeat what they've heard to make sure they understand it, or stay silent? You know, are they questioners? Are they, you know, like, those kind of things feel like, you can tell when there's been some thought put into a manuscript and you're reading the kind of dialogue, because there's like little things like that that seem to make them stand out a little bit more. Even if, like, the word choice is mostly the same, it's like how their dialogue appears is definitely a good way to distinguish them from other characters.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that for me, distinguishing characters and dialogues is about knowing your characters first, which does make it different for short stories and novels, because a novel, I do a lot more character development for novels. I mean, because the short stories I am writing right now are, like, under 3,000 words, which is very short. And so there's really not that much investment that goes ahead of time into character development. I basically just have a basic, hey, this is a business person, for instance. Whereas a novel, there's a lot more character development goes in. And so I think there's a lot more time to sort of think through what their personal mannerisms are, and have a sort of greater depth, and through sometimes just through writing the draft come upon phrases that they tend to use more than other people use. And then when two characters spend time together, letting them pick up on each other's way of speaking, I think is a really fun thing. I mean, depending on the situation, but if they just meet in the beginning and they speak very differently and they spend a lot of time with each other through the course of a significant length of time, they should actually rub off on each other to some extent, the way they speak. And having those patterns, and that's, I think, is really great at novel length, because you have that time and that depth. Whereas in short stories, it's just quick and dirty.
So it sounds like you favor, Chris, that your characters, making them sound distinct, is something that you do, like, from the initial conception, as opposed to I've seen other writers suggest that making the dialogue distinct is something you do on the first revision or something like that.
Whatever works. Certainly, so for me, dialogue comes naturally to me. Like, dialogue comes really naturally to some people and not at all naturally to other writers. It really varies by the person. And so because it comes very naturally to me, I would tend to feel it out. I tend to feel it out a lot. And then definitely in this something that the length of the novel, it will evolve over time. And then I will have to go back and make sure that the beginning has the same sort of tone as what I ended up developing over the course of the novel, because it's almost like a discovery process. I'm feeling it out. And for dialogue in particular, because so much of our way of speaking is not consciously known by us, you know, like there's so many rules we follow and it comes to dialogue without talking about it. I think that sort of feeling out process is almost more prevalent and works for a lot of people. But other people, if, you know, with the first draft, I was just like, get it done.
Get it done.
Get it complete and then revise. And if that get it done, if it would slow you down, if you would never get that draft done, if you were picking over making all the dialogue sound different, then yeah, it's probably better just to get it written, know approximately what they're communicating in the scene, and then go back and polish it up, you know, so that you actually get your draft finished.
You know, it would be really good to do is get that first draft done and then see if you can find any developmental editors out there to go back and forth with on how you think that dialogue should sound.
I think that might be more of a line editing thing, actually.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I could certainly work on that, but as usually stuff I'm dealing with as a developmental editor is a little bit above the dialogue stuff. I think that's more Chris's business as a line editor.
Yeah, so line editing, I do think that this is kind of line editing level, and line editing is interesting because you have developmental editors, who are people who look, or, you know, we call ourselves consultants at Mythgreance often, who kind of look at the plot and the character development, who some of them also do line editing, like I do line editing, and then we have people at the smaller copy edit level, like our editing services. Ariel is our sort of onboard editor who... Also, Ariel also does line editing, but I think that my line editing is different than Ariel's line editing because I'm coming from the top down and she's coming from the bottom up. But it's quite possible that either one of us would look at things like that. Although I gotta say, you know, usually when a dev editor looks at a manuscript, there's usually much, much bigger problems than that kind of dialogue polishing.
This is true. I have as yet to get a manuscript where the characters sounding distinct in dialogue was even a problem I was considering at that
right.
point.
Yeah, usually when a dev editor looks at a piece, there are just much, much larger problems. And so you would, for a dev editor, you would definitely getting into the very fine polishing to get to that point.
I do have another just basic piece of advice, again, for people like me who struggle with dialogue is... an easy way to make two characters sound distinct is to use different levels of formality. If one character is very formal and the other character is not, the more formal character is likely to use longer words and fewer contractions and just like less slang. And that's generally something that I think most writers can figure out. Like there are other, like making characters sound distinct in other ways can be very difficult, but having a character who sounds formal and like they have a high education or whatever is not as hard. Like, you know, you reach for your thesaurus more often. Whereas a character who speaks much more informally and uses a lot of slang, like they're going to sound very different. And in my experience, that's one of the easier things you can
yeah.
do.
I would say that very related to that is the knowledge that the characters have as it applies to the situation that they're in. Because technical terms are something that if a character knows a lot about whatever it is that they're talking about, technical terms are going to get in there, even if they're a very casual speaker, which can definitely distinguish them if they are just educated on a subject or knowledgeable on a subject. So that's related. I would say also the level of, like, how kind of, like, chatty and personal are they? Do they always want to, like, talk about their kids? I don't know if you guys know anybody who you know, basically wants to talk about their kids, whatever conversation they get in, but, you know, that those people exist. And so, you know, it's like some people, even if they're talking to a stranger, they'll talk about themselves and they'll talk about personal things just because it'll come up for them, and they don't have in their mind, they don't have any reason not to. Why not? You know, whereas other people are going to be much more distant.
Yeah, that's true. Question for both of you, thinking about when you're writing in a time period other than the present day, how important is it, do you think, to try to make your characters sound either accurate or, if not accurate to the time period, at least old-timey?
From my own attempts, anytime I try to make it sound like that, an older time, it's just like the language is just stilted and horrible. I don't think, honestly, like, I have a good enough grasp of, like, I haven't read enough like Jane Austen to like really like, you know the ins and outs of that kind of like social cultural intrigue. So like, I feel like maybe it's better to just, I don't know, maybe what you said, Oren, is like, if you're looking at a time period and you're writing about people from a certain, like, let's say upper echelon, then maybe like they would have higher education and be more prone to more polite language. But I would still probably suggest couching it in more like modern structural choices with the dialogue. I don't know. I just think it'd be hard to try to, like, you know, write, like, make your dialogue some kind of authentic, like, archaeology of text. Like, that would be hard.
Yeah. I mean, my feeling, I haven't attempted this before. So I generally avoid writing any, like, historical fiction just so that I don't have to research history.
Yeah.
yeah, not my forte. But I would say with something like this, probably what people would actually say in historical times would be too off-putting and confusing to readers, I would guess. And so what you're looking for is to give it the flavor without actually making it unpleasant for the reader. That means that you definitely want it to be more subtle. The most important thing would be to remove anachronisms from what people say, things that just sound too modern. I personally would probably pick out some historical fiction works and read what kind of dialogue was in them, and then, like, kind of look for what I liked and what I felt was fairly standard that my audience, who probably reads other historical pieces, would be looking for, and then use that as a guide.
You can get into some weird situations where sometimes a figure of speech is, like, actually quite old, but it sounds modern, and you can sometimes get into a situation where it is accurate for you to use that figure of speech in this time period, but it doesn't sound right. So that's something to be on the lookout for. I had an editing teacher once who insisted that it was wrong if you were writing a character before like the 70s to have any character say dove. They were supposed to say dived, because dove is apparently a fairly recent word. And it would be very wrong, and you shouldn't do it.
Apparently, have your cake and eat it too is like 400 years old.
Yeah,
but it probably would sound weird if you were writing a story that took place 400 years ago and people were using that idiom.
I'm gonna write a story about the person who coined that idiom. It'll be great. They'll just go around saying it, and everyone will be like, what does that mean? It's like, just listen for a minute. Have your cake and eat it too. It's gonna be big if you wanna get in on the ground floor of this.
Something else I think that we could recommend people do, although maybe a little bit, requires a little bit more effort, is if you can, pay attention to kind of like verbal tics that like you use yourself in normal speech and those of your friends. I know I'm guilty of kind of like ending statements by saying, right? Like I know that I do this with my friends and I get kind of teased about it, but like that small verbal cues, I have another friend who likes to finish her statements with, do you know what I mean? And that's very much, and I remember one time very almost, well, it was rude, saying like, yes, I do know what you mean. Like, but like, you know, like it was clear that like that was building some like frustration, but it was just her natural way of like kind of talking. It was her verbal tic, like, and everybody has them. Everybody has those kind of like little off choices that kind of you add to the end of your lines, or maybe you like to start your monologues with, well, actually, you know, like all of those like little things. It pays to pay attention to your friends and kind of see what you like that they say a lot, what you don't like, and maybe try to pirate those into your own writing.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, it's a good idea. I wouldn't do it as often as people do it in real life. But
that would be frustrating.
I mean, yes. That's the goal of dialogue, right? You want it to sound natural. You don't actually want it to be exactly what people would say.
No.
Just too many ums. Constant ums. Nothing but ums. That's like your new modern art piece is dialogue that sounds like a person actually said it. It'd be awful, but I'm sure, like, you could get some group of people who would think it was great. Probably not enough to, like, support yourself, but, you know, who knows? You could get famous.
You said that, and Chris and I both went, uh-huh. That's a very subtle way to differentiate, right? Because, like, quick one word or utterances for like agreement or disagreement, those can be different too, right? Yes, yep, uh-huh, no, uh-uh. Like, it's very subtle. It could be a little bit too far here, but yeah. I just felt like it was worth noting.
I personally love using huh, you know, for surprise.
Yeah.
Or something. Mm-hmm. I that's one of my favorites of the short little kind of sounds. I guess they're more sounds even than they are words, yeah. But
I think my favorite sound is just meh, you know, like kind of that noise for I don't care.
I don't know. I feel kind of meh about it myself, but, you know, whatever. All right. Well, since we only have about 4 minutes left, I wanted to mention a couple of stories that have very good, distinctive voices.
Oh, yeah.
The one that I had off the top of my head is The Martian. In particular, the voice of Mark Watney is very distinct and very strong. The voices of his other characters, not so much, except for Annie, because she swears a lot. But the other characters are fairly interchangeable. But Mark has a really strong voice.
Right. And I would like to add that I think what we were talking about with temperament is one of the key things in Mark's voice. He's very irreverent and kind of joking. And I think he's also not afraid to swear. But that I think the mood that Mark Watney has is one of the kind of essential components of making his dialogue and voice very distinct.
Yeah, and there's also I also think that Discworld is another example of a story that has very strong voice with most of its characters, and like that they sound distinct. Which actually brings another question that I've been meaning to ask. Do you think that it makes a difference for making your characters sound distinct which point of view you're writing in? Or is it basically the same lessons?
I don't think if we're actually talking about in quotes dialogue, then I don't think it should matter. Unless, okay, very niche scenario. Sometimes you want, if you have a viewpoint character and somebody is saying something to them, on very rare occasions, you want them to not have trouble understanding the other person. To put the audience on board with the experience that they are having. And so in that case, you would be basically, most of the time, you want your dialogue to be 100% understandable. In very niche scenarios that you should not overdo, you might break that rule a little bit. And so that would be the one exception where the character is saying something, you don't quite want the viewpoint character to understand it easily. Other than that, I would think that it really should be exactly the same. Because it's more like it's a showing. It's like a record of the sound that somebody's hearing more than it is a record of their, like, internalized processing of that sound, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Yeah, I would also caution that if you do go with, like, omniscient point of views, then avoid the temptation to say things like, you know, he said condescendingly, she, you know, said haughtily, and like, you know, like all these extra like little tags that you could add to the end of those things. Those are not, I don't know, they really annoy me, and I think they're just the bane of copy editors.
Yeah.
But, they don't add anything. Like, the words themselves should convey those emotions. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
that it, yeah,
unfortunately I don't think that's limited to omniscient. I think, well, a lot of new writers, I think they just by default, when they haven't really looked into viewpoints and perspective yet, they start writing in kind of a really distant third, like, person limited viewpoint. Mm-hmm. That is kind of close to omniscient, but isn't really taking advantage of omniscient. And so they tend to do that.
Yeah, but I mean, in general, any kind of dialogue tags other than said or occasionally asked are pretty much frowned on. Like, it's not that you never use them, it's just that there's very rarely a reason.
Basically, the more boring the dialogue tag is, the more it is approved.
One example that I was thinking of was, I was real quick here, I was just thinking when we were planning for this, what was the first book I read that had really like strong distinctive voices for me? And I remember the Redwall books, you know, being like, you know, like the moles had their like mole speech, right? And the hares kind of had, I remember the hares always going like, what? You know, like all the animal groups in that kind of had fun little tics and different ways of kind of like expressing their stuff with beyond just like completely different like words for things or different ways of expressing it. I don't know. I remember that from elementary school that stood out to me. I haven't reread them in forever. I don't know if they hold up, but that did stand out to me.
That sounds like it's an example of like I was talking about earlier about fantasy groups, you know, where you have like your characters are divided into different groups, but they're not based on real world. They're based on some sort of fantasy or other world distinctions, and then you can kind of make up what you want them to speak like.
Like the closest of any of the Redwall animals to a real life group is the hares sound kind of like a really exaggerated British accent. And it's like, okay, if that's the worst you're gonna get, that's fine. It's not, not a lot of social justice problems around making fun of a British accent. Like, maybe your British readers won't like that, but it's not too bad. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think the Redwall books do a pretty decent job. But speaking of that, we are at the end of our runtime. We must be gone for today. So if anything we said, you at home, piqued your interest, you can email us at podcast@mythgreens.com. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. When he came around, tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. He accepted it graciously. Now he visits every weekend with the princess who saved herself. This has been the Mythgreens Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Coulton.